You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.
Well, good morning, good morning. Welcome to Makers Church. Thanks for being here on 4th of July week. And apparently today's Canada Day, so happy Canada Day. Wow. Yeah, Canadians. Oh, Canadians are here. Hey, welcome, eh? That's the only Canadian I know. Well, thanks for being here. My name is Mark. I'm one of the pastors. And if you've been with us for a little bit, you know we've been journeying as a community, as a church, through this series called Prism. We're a little more than halfway through, and it's been really fun. What we're doing is the three of us, Pastor Shalise, Pastor Derek, and myself, have been taking three different scriptures or three different stories, and we've been unpacking them three different ways. The idea is that as a prism can take white light and refract all these beautiful colors that are within it, the scriptures has all of this truth packed in it. It's this well of meaning and wholeness that we can pull from. And that we too, we as the children of God, we as people made in his image, filled with his spirit, we too can be prisms that refract and reflect the beauty of God's light in the world. And just like a prism can also capture the beauty around us and point it back to Jesus. So it's been a really fun season, a fun series to see how God's moving through our community and how God's moving through these scriptures. I'm speaking on the third and final week of the story of Jacob's ladder or Jacob's stairway. If you're like me and you're like, man, there's been so many good things already said, how is there anything left to say on this passage? But as I've been preparing this week, man, there's gold left in those hills. There's some deep, deep truth left. Apparently that landed with Corey. That was funny. There's some gold left. There's some good meaning there. And it's a story we're going to get into in a second. And it's this weird experience that this guy Jacob has, this dream, this vision. And I thought about dreams, which are weird things. Right? Like, why do we have dreams? There's a whole array of philosophies on what they mean, what the purpose is. I don't dream a lot. I don't know about you. I don't have a lot of dreams. When I was a kid, I used to have weird recurring ones. Like, I would wake up and it would be like finals day for a class that I had never studied for. Have you guys ever had that dream? Or I would like be at a job and I'd be at a job interview and like, wow, you're a perfect candidate, but you never passed like junior high history. And then like in my dream, I'm transported back and it's finals and I don't know anything and it's terrifying. And, or I would have dreams where I was being chased by somebody. But when I tried to run, it was like quicksand. You guys ever had that dream? It's like a reoccurring one. I used to have that all the time, but then I had a life hack, I had a dream hack where I couldn't run, but I discovered I could power walk. So I would have, there'd be like Freddy Krueger or Chucky would be chasing me and I'm like, oh no. And then I start power walking and I could get away. I'm like, bye Felicia. And I would be gone. And it was like my new strength, my new superpower, my dreams was power walking. Or I actually did have a dream last night, which again is rare for me. Don't say, oh no, it's not going to be bad. It's a good wholesome dream. But in my dream, so I have a truck, I have a 98 Chevy. As you guys, you've probably seen it, you probably think it's like an abandoned vehicle out there. There's probably a family of raccoons living in the engine. That's my commuting vehicle. I've had it for 15 years. 15 years. I love it. I hate it. It's a terrible thing. I'm waiting for it to die, but it never dies. Chevy, it made it well. But in this dream, people like I haven't seen in years show up at my house and they start cleaning out my truck and like we're cleaning it out because we're gonna sell it. And I was like, no, you can't do it. So this is like a nightmare. I'm like, don't sell my truck. It's even got like it's bad steering. So when you can do this and it doesn't even move. It's like an old timing movie. It's terrible. But I had this nightmare that my truck was being sold, and my wife would probably be super excited if that happened. But we're never getting rid of it. It's this weird thing, like. You know when you're a kid, like your parents, you can kind of complain about your parents, but if someone else talks bad about your parents, you're like, shut up, that's my mom. Like, you don't know her. That's my truck. Like, I can make fun of it, you can't, so just leave it alone. Anyways, dreams are weird things. Some people love them. My wife, like, journals her dreams. They have a lot of meaning for her. In scriptures, we see a lot of times God speaks to people through dreams. I know I had at least one dream that I'm not going to talk about now, but I had it when I was 17. I had just become a believer. And it's the one dream I'm confident had deep spiritual significance. I still don't even know quite what it means, but it's something that I don't talk about often, but I will go back and reflect on. Like, what was God saying there? And I see that happens here in this story. So I'm going to read this passage in Genesis. I'm going to recap the story that happens, and we're going to pull some truth out of it. So in Genesis 20, it says this. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. And when he had reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching towards heaven. And the angels of God were ascending and descending upon it. And there above it, or as we'll talk about in Shalisa, or there beside him stood the Lord. And he said, I am the Lord, I am Yahweh, his personal name. He says, I am the God of your father, Abraham, and the God of Isaac. And I will give you and your descendants the land upon which you are lying. And your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and they will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north, to the south, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land, and I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. And he was afraid. And he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, the gate of heaven. And early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head, and he set it up as a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it. And he called the place Bethel, which means house of God, though the city used to be called Luz. Then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and if he will watch over me on this journey I'm taking and if he will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's household, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And all that you give me, I will give you a tenth. Interesting story, crazy story. I want to say two points that we've made already. I want to recap them because they're important threads and themes that go through each of these weeks. And then I want to pull some new insights from it. The first is this reality that this stairway mentioned here, this stairway is Jesus. Jesus claims to be this stairway. He says it like this in John 1:51. He says, and then he added, he's speaking to his people. He says, very truly I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Son of Man, I'm not going to talk about it now. One day I would love to do a sermon on it once I study more. But Son of Man is Jesus' favorite title for himself. No one else calls him Son of Man anywhere else in Scriptures. Everyone else calls him Son of God, Messiah, Rabbi, all these things. He calls himself Son of Man. But anyways, what he's saying is, I am this stairway. And I love that we can see in this series that life in existence isn't necessarily this linear thing, that it's this moving circle where Jesus in the future is going back and saying, hey, people of Israel, you guys have been talking about the stairway for thousands of years, trying to figure out like we're doing now, what does it mean? What does it represent? What's the significance? And Jesus says, I've been that stairway all along. I've been that conduit and that connection between humanity and the divine. I've been the way, the truth, and the life all along. I've been this pathway for you to have a connection with God. And Jesus gives them this insight. I love it. I love stories. I love movies that do that where something happens at the end and it changes everything. Like, have you seen Sixth Sense where like Bruce Willis is a ghost at the end? Sorry if that ruins it for you. It's like 20 years. It's not a spoiler. But like it changes everything. Or like Harry Potter, any Harry Potter fans, like you find out at the end that Snape was actually good all along. And it's like, it blows your mind. It's like, oh, you can go back and see all these little nuggets of truth that are so different because of this reality. And even in our own lives, as we grow and mature as people and as God does a work in us, we can even, through God's Spirit, revisit trauma or past in our own self or good things and see God redeem those hurts and pains from our past so that we have a different future. Or we can see God's hand moving where maybe we never saw it before. And like, oh man, that was you, God. That was you moving 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Jesus is saying, I've been that stairway. I've been that conduit of grace and power all along. It's an important thing. I love it. And then second point too that we've been unpacking together a lot is this reality that God was in this place and we weren't aware of it. Jacob says, God was in this place. I'm not aware of it. God is everywhere. God is a God who is not distant, but the God who is near. He is in all things. All things move and live and have their being in him. But sometimes we don't see it. We're unaware of it. Sometimes we call things like a God moment when like something happens that we can't explain. I think God moment is just a matter of perspective. It's happening all the time, right? Like now because of modern science, we kind of understand how babies are made and how babies are born. We get the science behind it, but it's no less of a miracle than when people had no idea. It's even more beautiful because you see the hand of the creator in it. God's presence is a matter of perspective. We can see God all over. Shalise talked about that last week. God's presence is in the small, it's in the big. When I was little, I used to hear the phrase, the devil's in the details. But I wonder if it's the divine. I wonder if that's where God is at in those small moments, those mundane moments, if we would choose to practice his presence. It's a practice. I have this weird thing I've done since I became a believer when I was 17. It's so dumb. But when I'm in a public bathroom and if there's paper towels by the garbage can, I pick them up and I put them in. Even if they're not mine, I just do it. I don't know why I did that. It just had this urge. I became a Christian. I didn't even know what to do. I'm like, God, how do I be loving? And I'm like, oh, there's garbage. I'll put it in the garbage can. And it's this weird thing I do. And it's not out of legalism, but it's this little moment that happens every day of my life where it's this time where I stop and my mind is centered to God and I can be grateful and I can pray. And sometimes it's a 2-second thing. And sometimes I like stop and like have a real conversation. But it's this practice that I've developed. And I have other things like that where like, I need to lean into God's presence in these moments because he's everywhere. He's in me picking up the trash. And then it sets me up to see him moving in bigger, greater ways later on. And it's just this developing thing. God was in this place. God is in this place. Are you aware of it? That's a question for all of us. So those two themes, God is the stairway, Jesus is the stairway, and God is in this place. Let's pull some new insights from this story. And those things will be a foundation for us that we just talked about. The first one is stone pillows. Rock of our salvation, God at our lowest. I think it's fascinating that it talks about Jacob's pillow being a stone. Like, why mention that fact? For me, two things come to mind. First is that stones, rocks, have a lot of powerful, weighty spiritual significance all throughout scriptures. It's this motif that we see over and over again. God is the rock of ages. He is the rock of our salvation. It says Jesus is the chief cornerstone. He is the rock of our salvation. We see this everywhere. There's even a scripture where it talks about when we step into the new heaven and new earth, God has our names written on white stones that only he and we know. There's this intimacy. There's all kinds of beautiful poetry to it. And I wonder if this stone here is meant to represent, just like the stairway is Jesus, that stone is Jesus. And saying that stone that you're relying on, that foundation has been me all along. I think it's another thing that points back to Jesus, the Savior of the world, the Son of God, the Son of Man. But I also, at least this week, am really moved by what I think is a very practical perspective. And it's the reality that, man, him having a stone pillow showed that he was literally at rock bottom. He was in a rough spot in his life. If you know the story, Jacob is running for his life. He's not been a very good guy to this point. He's been a liar. He's been a thief. Him and his mom steal the birthright from his older brother. And his older brother says, man, when my father dies, I'm going to kill him. So Jacob's literally a refugee. He's running for his life. He's in a foreign land. He has nothing. He has no one. He's at his wit's end. He's at his lowest. He's at rock bottom. And a pillow that's made of stone. Man, that sucks. And I wonder, man, sometimes it seems like when we're at our lowest is when God actually shows up. Or maybe it's just then that we can see him. Maybe that's when he strips away all the other things that take our attention or things that we put pride in. Those things are removed and all that's left is this raw need. And that's where we experience God. So sometimes it's at our lowest that God makes his appearance. Jesus says, I am near to the brokenhearted. I am near those who are downcast. So if you're at a low point today, if you're at a low point this week, if you're at a low point this year, know that God is near. God is in this place. He is desiring to do something healing and restorative in you. God is in this place, something we can pull from the stone pillow. Second is this idea that I call a proximity effect. God over us, God beside us. It's interesting to me that when we look at this stairway analogy, it actually says in the scriptures here that the stairway is resting on earth, stretching to heaven. And it says the angels are ascending and then descending. It starts with them on earth moving towards heaven, not the other way around. It's significant. It's showing that the angels had already been there. And in scriptures, angels represent both the presence and the power of God. And what I pull from this is God saying, I've been here all along. Sometimes I think we have this understanding that man and God had this connection and then man sinned and there was this huge separation and God forsake mankind and mankind was left to their own devices. And we've been just trying to get our way back. And God's like, I never left. There is no place that's God forsaken. There are places maybe you're afraid to go, or maybe places you're afraid to see, but I'm there. I've been here all along. I've been here and I've been the conduit. The angels are ascending first and descending. God is near to us. And as Shalise pointed out last week, this is also something that's been powerful for me, is in the language in the scriptures here, many translations, when they're talking about the stairway, talking about God, they say, God above it. But many translations say, and they're beside him. And if you research the Hebrew, the scholars say, actually, probably the most accurate translation is to say they're beside him or they're leaning over him. Whatever the case, the language absolutely projects proximity. It projects closeness. If you Google Jacob's Ladder or Jacob's Stairway, there's a lot of weird art out there. I'll just say that. Be careful. But there is all the old art. It always shows if God's in it, is God's way far away at the top of this ladder. And he looks like Zeus. He's got the white beard and the robes. And he looks stern and he's far away. But what the language says is Jacob's having this dream. He's lying on his back and he sees a stairway and God's next to him. Or God's leaning over him. And he's like, hey, Jacob, I have something to tell you. There's a proximity, there's a closeness. He's like, I have something to show you. He's not the God billowing down commands. He's the God who's near. He's Emmanuel, the God with us, who says, I have a promise to give you. You need to wake up. It's this closest, this proximity, and we miss that because, as Shalise talked about too, sometimes we have this misconception of God. Back then, they had gods like Marduk, these angry, stern, fickle gods. And even now, our modern culture still largely has a pagan view of God. We're influenced by Zeus and Jupiter. When I was a kid, when I heard about God, I pictured the dad from Little Mermaid, King Triton or whatever his name is, with the beard, the muscles, and I'm like, is God a merman? And like, no, God's spirit, so he's a mer, gender-neutral person. He's no man, he's both. But I'm like, I didn't understand what God was. But see, again, we think of God in these terms, these frameworks. And God, as I spoke about a few weeks ago, God's saying the truest thing about me is that I am love. God is love. It's the truest thing about my essence. Therefore, the truest thing about your essence is that you are loved. And what that also means is the truest thing about those around you is they are loved. That includes the guy who steals your parking lot at work, or the person who gets your coffee order wrong, or the person on Facebook who's just, annoying and ignorant. You all know whoever that is for you. The truest thing about them is that they are loved, and that we are loved, and that God is loved, and God is near. What this is doing is it's subtly changing the whole way we see the divine, from this distance to this nearness. And that framework alone is revolutionary and powerful. Another point I want to pull from this is this ideal of unbreakable covenant. Unbreakable covenant. This promise that God gives to Jacob. He says, I'm going to give you the land that you're lying on, and I'm going to bless the entire world through you and your offspring. There are no conditions given there. You notice that? There are no commands. If you do this, I'll do this. There's no ifs, there's no caveats, there's no footnotes, there's no asterisks. He literally just gives him a promise. And we see this over and over. I just had the privilege of doing a wedding yesterday. And in the wedding, they do vows. They read their personal vows. And I love it because in a wedding vow, you don't add any conditionals in there either, right? That'd be really lame for like, I'll love you, but if you gain 10 pounds, bye. Like, you don't do that in there. Like you literally say, like, for richer, for poorer, for sickness and health. Like it's the same kind of covenantal promise. And this is the language that God is using here. It is marriage covenant. It is chesed. It's this Hebrew word that means mercy and loving kindness. And it says, God will not forsake it because it's not based on Jacob's goodness. This covenant is based on the goodness of God. He's like, I'm basing this covenant based on your character, but on my character, and I will not leave you. And I wonder in our own lives, what if we treated people not based on their character, but based on our character? I wonder that, because sometimes people can be so frustrating. And you want to correct them and teach them and like, you know, whatever it is. But what if you responded based on your character, based on the goodness that God's doing in you? Because he's the example for us. And God, the loving Father who is defined by love, says, I will make a covenant and I will make a promise that I will keep. And it comes without conditions. It comes before any kind of performance. That said, there is a reality that there are different kinds of promises throughout Scripture to different kinds of people, and there are different kinds of realities. And there is a truth, I believe, to us being able to experience the blessing and the benefits of God's goodness through our choices to perceive it. Let me say it this way. Jesus says this in John 15. If God is love and we are loved, for us to fully experience that love, we must remain in it. We must dwell in it. It says this. Jesus says, you are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. You were born in love. You were created in love. Your default is to be loved. Remain in me, and I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. As the Father has loved me, so I love you. Now remain in my love. God makes these promises to us. He makes these promises to Jacob. He's like, but if you want to experience it yourself to the fullest, you have to engage with it. He says, if you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. And I have told you this so that your joy may be full and my joy may be in you. And my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. We can experience God's promises and his love by engaging with it. Next point that I pull from this, target fixation. Where are we looking? Target fixation, I've talked about this before. It's this phenomenon, it happens to me when you're riding a bike or riding a dirt bike or something like that. Where you look is where you go. So when we're riding dirt bikes, Derek and I, if we're going on crazy trails, if you see a scary tree, a rock, or a ledge, they say, don't look at that ledge because you're going to go off that ledge. It's just how your body works. Look where you want to go. Keep your eyes on the trail. Keep the eyes on the guy in front of you. Keep your eyes on where you're going because that's where you're going to end up, where you're looking. So in this story, it's fascinating to me that Jacob, after he receives this powerful promise from God, he then responds, and you can see his immaturity. This is Jacob's first encounter with God, and you can see his immaturity, his ignorance. And he's saying, okay, God, he starts making deals. If you'll be with me, and if you give me food and clothes and all of this, I guess I'll give you 10% of my stuff. And God's like, okay, whatever. And then he says, notice this, Jacob says, and if you help me return safely to my father's household. Jacob is still trying to get back to where he started. He still wants to go back to his father's household that he got kicked out of. And God says, I'm actually trying to take you to a new place. I'm trying to give you a new land, a new promise, a new purpose. And you're looking back. How often do we do that? Either something good or something traumatic in our past, and we look back and we dwell there. It was once said, to live in the past is to die in the present. And I think there's truth to that. God wants to redeem our past again. He wants to tell us truths now that reshape and reclaim our past so that it propels us forward. But he says, you need to keep your eyes on where I'm taking you. My promise and my plans are so much bigger than you even imagine yet. Jacob, there's no way you could know what's happening. It's going to take thousands of years and so many generations to unfold, but it's good. Keep your eyes in that direction. And for us, target fixation, where are you looking? Where are you focusing on? Are you focusing on these things that keep you in cycles and in loops and in slavery? Or are you looking to where God is trying to take you? We have to ask ourselves these questions because God says, I'm trying to take you to new places and do new things. It's beautiful. Second to last one here, trust exercise. Resist the urge to religify or overcomplicate. Stay with me on this one for a sec. Again, I think it's interesting that Jacob's reaction to God's promise, which is given without strings, is to then respond with sort of religious activity. He wants to set up a temple. He wants to make deals. He wants to do all these things that sometimes we look at scriptures and we're like, oh, is he setting precedent? And like, no, scripture's just telling you what Jacob did. It's revealing his headspace. And it's interesting, like he wants to set up this temple. Oh, this must be God's house. I had this vision here. This must be where God lives. This must be the gateway. But we know that God's so much bigger than that. It says this in 1 Corinthians 3:16. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's spirit dwells in your midst? See, God's breaking down these religifying activities that we do and these overcomplifications. Stay with me here. I see parallels between this story and what I think is one of the most cool, strange encounters in the Gospels. It happens with Jesus and three of his closest followers, one of them being Peter. And it's this weird thing called the Transfiguration, where this crazy vision happens, just like Jacob sees this vision. All the guys are afraid, just like Jacob's afraid. They respond in overcomplicating ways, just like Jacob does. And we can see it here. What happens is Jesus takes his followers, three of them, to this mountaintop. And what happens is they have this crazy experience where they see light and they see thunder and they see smoke and they see dead people. They see Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus and they're freaked out. And Peter responds to this crazy situation like this. He says, Peter said to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, meaning let us make three little temples just like Jacob did. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. And I love that it says in parentheses here, he did not know what to say. They were so frightened. Then a cloud appeared and covered them, and a voice came from the cloud saying, this is my son, whom I love. Listen to him. There's this crazy experience that mirrors a lot of what happens to Jacob, and these guys are freaked out. They don't know what to do, and Peter feels like he needs to fill the silence with something. So he's like, oh, good Lord, it's good that we're here. Let us build tabernacles for thee and Peter and all these things. And it says there in parentheses, he didn't know what he was saying. The book of Mark, tradition says Peter is actually the main source for that. So Peter has insight, like, listen, Mark, I didn't know what I was saying at this point. And then in Luke, it says the same thing. It says, Peter did not know what he was saying. And then I love in Matthew, Peter doesn't even have time. As he's speaking, he doesn't even finish what he's saying. Like God steps in and like talks over him. He sort of like pulls a Kanye, where he's like, I got this. I'm gonna let you finish. But then like God steps in and doesn't even let him complete a sentence. And he says, this is my son whom I love. Listen to him. Here's my takeaway from this. Sometimes we see these things and we're like, what do these signs mean? What do these signs in my life mean? What does this whole crazy transfiguration mean? And God's saying, all that matters right now, all that you need to know right now is that Jesus is my son. I love him. Do what he says. That's all you need to know right now. You're not going to understand the why just yet. That will unfold as you journey with Jesus. And to Jacob, I think God is saying the same thing. Listen, you don't even understand what all the symbolism means yet. It's going to take generations to unfold. You don't need to respond with these religious things. You don't need to add to my promise. All you need to know is God says, I am with you wherever you go. I will not leave you. And I'm going to bless the world through you. I love that. He doesn't even tell Jacob where to go. He doesn't tell Jacob what to do. He just says, I'm going to be with you wherever you go. Again, God doesn't micromanage us. He wants to inspire us and transform us because when we are inspired, when we are in spirit, we are led by the Spirit and we are participants in the activity of God. And it's not him being a puppet master. He's saying, you're in this with me. You're my children. I will be with you where you go. I'm going to accomplish my promise. That's a for sure. And I want you to be a part of that. And for me, the comfort is in my own life. I like to know why. I like to know why things are happening. I like to know the meaning behind things. It's how my brain works. I'm always trying to discover, to dissect, to figure it out. And to me, God speaks sometimes and says, you don't need to know the why just yet. What you need to do is trust. This is a trust exercise. All you need to know is that I'm God and I love you and I'm going to be with you. And this is the truth God speaks to Peter and it's truth he speaks to Jacob here. Last point. Blessing. The blessing is for all people. It says that. If we go back, he says, all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. We see this theme again and again in scriptures. John 3:16, for God so loved the whole world that he came. Behold, I am making all things new. God is redeeming and blessing and loving all, but we are the ones, sometimes even the church, who wants to put stipulations on that. You know, theologically, oh, well, he didn't mean all, he didn't mean them. Or politically, like, oh, he doesn't mean them, he means, you know, we're always trying to narrow down who God's trying to bless. And God's like, don't do that. I'm not doing that. Why? Who are you to think that you can restrict my blessing and my love when I'm trying to bless the entire universe through you and your offspring? And I love that that word offspring, in English, it is a singular and it is a plural. You can have one offspring, you can have 10 offspring, the same word. It's the exact same in the Hebrew. What he's speaking about here is the singular offspring. He's speaking about Jesus, one of those specks of dust who from thousands of years and all these generations would come, the Son of Man, the stairway, who will change everything. But he's also speaking about us as well, the plural offspring. We are the co-heirs with Christ, the sons of daughters. It says this here in Galatians in 3:29, if you are Christ's, then you are Abraham's offspring and heirs according to promise. God is using Jesus and he's using us to bring about blessing to all the world. Are you a part of that? Are you stepping into that? Or are you a barrier to that? I love that it's for all people. I'll close on this. This story of Jacob's stairway, of Jacob's ladder, has often been compared to in ways to this other story in Genesis, the Tower of Babel, where it's actually people not trying to reach God. They're trying to just rival God. And they're trying to make a name for themselves by building this great tower through their pride and their hubris. And what happens is it leads to this division of peoples and languages, which in itself isn't a bad thing, but those different languages then lead to conflict and strife and enmity. And this diversity leads to separation and to walls and to barriers. And then we see the ramifications of that through all human history, this conflict, this tribalism of like, you're not us, so we don't like you. But then we see Jesus, the new stairway, the new tower who comes and says, I will be the God of all people. I will draw everyone to myself. At my name, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. After Jesus dies and rises again, there's this thing called the Pentecost where his spirit descends on his people for the first time in a new way. And they speak out in all these different languages, praising God. And we see where Tower of Babel represented the separation of peoples, Jesus represents the uniting of peoples. And where these different languages, this diversity was conflict, now this diversity is this beautiful harmony that never existed before. These different languages give us different prisms about the goodness of God. There are studies that show that people who speak multiple languages, when they retell a story, it's actually slightly different in each language because the language activates different parts of our emotion. We can reflect the different parts of God's beauty through diversity. Diversity was God's plan all along. And he says, through me, you will be united. I am the new stairway. I am bringing all people together. I am making all things new. My blessing is for all. And it's going to come through my offspring. First, through Jesus, the author and the initiator of our faith. And secondly, through us, his body, his people, his children. This is a call to action. We are no longer supposed to say, you are not us. We are to love all, and that needs to be reflected in our political policies, in the way we act at work, the way we act with our family and friends, the way we encounter people. We must ask the question, am I responding with love and with blessing? Or is what I'm doing, is it really, truly out of fear? Or is it out of selfishness? It's this question that God is asking of us. And we see it all the way back here in the story of Jacob. So again, as to close, to recap here, stone pillows. God often shows up at our lowest, or that's when we often see him. Don't run from him in those moments. Proximity effect. God is a God who is near. He's Emmanuel. He's a God who is with us. Unbreakable covenant. God's love for you is unshakable, unbreakable. It's based on his goodness, not yours. What if we decided to remain in that, to remain in that love, and to love others not based on their character, but on ours, as we are being renewed in Jesus? Target fixation. Where are you looking? Where are you looking? Are you looking always to the past? Are you always looking to the future and never seeing what's in front of you now? Seek God. Ask God to show me new places. Trust exercise. Are you always overcomplicating things? God, what do I do next? Where do I go? Tell me the answers. What does this all mean? God's like, I've told you, love me, love people. I'm going to show you things along the way. All you need to do at this point is trust. The why will come later. And finally, the blessing is for all people. And it comes by us and through us and it's for us. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you for the deep truths that you've placed all throughout scriptures and how you are revealing yourself to us progressively over time. We are learning more and more about your character. We are discovering more and more about your goodness, and we will never find the edge of that. For your goodness and your love are infinite. They have no end. What a privilege and an honor to spend our lives searching that and reflecting it, God. May we trust in you as the stairway, the pathway, the conduit. May we be conduits of your grace. We thank you and we praise you, Jesus. Amen.
You are listening to the Makers Church podcast. For more information about our community, please visit makerschurch.org.